is Davin's Den. Is Davin's Den.
All right, we are back. You're listening or watching Davin's Den, and Joe and myself are joined by Kevin Lee. We've had a very spirited, a lot of current event topics in the first segment of the show. Doesn't always happen, but there was so much stuff happening today. So many things. So much COVID. So much politicians resigning in disgrace. I bet he comes back. All right, let's continue the arguing. Shall we?
Oh, that sounds fun.
Sure. So, no, that wasn't really arguing. We were all very well behaved. Good for us. Bully to us. Let's do some School of Fools here.
School of Fools.
All right, a Washington state family is demanding that a Spokane school administrator be removed after he suggested to, quote, segregate two black teenagers who felt uncomfortable with the classroom assignment that involved cleaning cotton. Twins. fucking names every week. Mzaya. I'll tell you what, and the second twin's name is a hell of a Scrabble score. If you Zayashani. Fiesel. Listen, if you're going to spell that whole name, you're going to have to use a blank because there's only one Z. And if you're going to spell both names, so good for her parents. Good for them. Said on May 3rd, their social studies teacher at Sacagawea, I know that one, middle school, took out a box of raw cotton during a lesson on industrial economics and told the class they were going to do, quote, a fun activity and to see who could clean cotton the fastest, according to the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington. The teen said the activity made them feel embarrassed and angry and told their mother, Brandy Fiesel, about the incident. We didn't learn about the slave trade or anything about the history of slavery, Mzaya said to in the ACLU statement. The lesson made it seem like enslaved people existed just to pick and clean cotton. When the mother called the school, assistant principal Taylor Skidmore defended the teacher's actions. After hanging up, Fiesel said Skidmore called again and suggested he could segregate. Really? Is that the best word you had? Them from class, which he would allow them to avoid interacting with the teacher, who is white, according to the ACLU. Fiesel was shocked at the suggestion and removed her children from the school, which actually did segregate them, and saying they don't feel comfortable going back. I knew at that point that my concerns were going upon absolutely deaf ears, that there was going to be no concern or action of any sort, Fiesel told USA Today. I knew I literally had to go to the district and try to get some answers. Sandra Gerard, director of communications for the Spokane Public School District, told USA Today a third-party investigator was hired to look into the matter. The students were learning about the Industrial Revolution. The cotton engine was discussed. We take all complaints very seriously and are committed to investigating them fully. There are conflicting reports to the incident. Once the third-party investigation is completed, we look forward to coming back to share the outcomes. Fiesel said she and her kids have had a lot of mixed emotions since they left the school. It's a lot of stress involved because there's a lot of unknown things. We don't know where things are going to go, and we don't know where we're currently standing, she said. The family also wants the social studies teacher and other school administrators to be disciplined in addition to the removal of Skidmore, as well as a formal apology from the school district. I need my daughters to know that going back to school is a safe environment. I need them to know that they can speak up, Fiesel said. The district passed a racial equality resolution in June 2020 that includes anti-racism training for staff and faculty, as well as the expansion of multicultural organizations across the school district. All right, here's the thing. There's a lot of things going on here. I think if you're talking about the Industrial Revolution, which is what they are claiming they were speaking about, you wouldn't really be talking about slavery. That seems like that would be in a different section. It seems like the slavery section would be in the Civil War. The Industrial Revolution happened after the Civil War. It would be a problem, in my mind, if we were just going to have the twins, the two African-American girls, as the only ones picking cotton. And we've covered stories like that before in this show where we go, what the fuck was the teacher thinking? That's not the case here. It seems like the whole class was doing it. I'm imagining they were trying to show the how much the cotton gin saved time, which was created by an African-American man, Eli Whitney. You know, how much faster the cotton gin was. I actually think this is good teaching because students will just glaze over if you're just constantly talking to them. This is a hands-on thing. I think the real issue was the choice of words by Skidmore. Segregation, not a helpful word when these children feel and their parents feel slighted, whether rightly or wrongly, and they're the only African American ones, and it's a white class and a white teacher. You go, well, we can segregate them. Yeah, that's the problem right there, and that's where Skidmore should go. Listen, I misspoke. I used the wrong word. I did not mean segregate. I meant if they were uncomfortable in the situation, perhaps we could work on a compromise together. That being said, and you guys obviously are going to weigh in on this, I don't think the lesson is inherently racist. I think it would be racist in a way to assume that that's racist. I think the student looked at, this is my class. We're talking about the Industrial Revolution. We're talking about the cotton gin. I wanted that even the fastest person, whoever that was, who cleaned cotton, would still not be able to do it as quick as this machine, the cotton gin. That's how I look at it.
It's very insensitive.
Okay.
And there's other ways to have had this type of lesson without using cotton, you know.
Well, but if the cotton gin was a big invention for the Industrial Revolution.
It also was the used by slavery to build the American wealth gap that this country has.
And that's a very valid conversation that should be discussed during the Civil War and slavery. And I believe.
Wait a minute. A few months ago, nobody wanted critical race theory. Now all of a
sudden, we've talked about that on this show.
Now we have critical race theory all of a sudden because hold on, I'm going to Zoom meeting. I think I clicked this by accident.
No, you're there. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
We've all talked about that on the show, and we all agree the history of this country, however painful it should be taught. We all agree
okay,
that.
Okay. So if this was a black teacher, and she was doing this, white parents would be very upset.
Why?
Because they would then say that they don't want their kids to know about anything that had to do with slavery.
But this is the Industrial Revolution. This isn't slavery. This is post-slavery.
There's no such thing as post-slavery. People were picking cotton after slavery. Cotton picking went way into the whole Jim Crow
era.
Right,
but it wasn't slaves.
Let's lock the guy up for jaywalking, put him in jail, make him pick
cotton.
But
that's not the complaint here. One of the complaints was that that it seemed like slaves were only there to pick cotton. First of all, again, this isn't about slavery, this section. I agree that there probably should be a section on slavery, and I'm sure there is. Also, you know what? If you're a slave master, and this is going to be harsh, and this is part of the critical race theory that needs to be taught, yes, that's how they looked at slaves. You were there to do a job. They were looked at as property. So you should, if we are talking about slavery, you should not be offended. You should be glad that this is being taught, because that was what was so, that was the schism of our country, that we looked at African-American black people as 3/5 of a human being. And they were property. And yes, you picked until you died. You picked tobacco until you died. So I'd actually be upset if the white teacher did gloss over that. But these twins are complaining that they made it seem like slaves were only supposed to pick cotton. Yeah, that was the fucking gig. And it sucked. And it was inhumane. So they're all over the place, Kevin.
Well, I think I think it's very insensitive to have African Americans, even in any situation, picking cotton. In
so,
this day, because it's not really something that we want to remember. I mean, it was a bad time for African Americans.
Wait, you just said you want critical race theory taught, and now you said you don't want to remember it. Which is it?
Okay, well, you got me on that one. I'm just saying, I mean, not taught.
This is our history. This is our shared history. It fucking sucks.
Right.
This is our history, though.
Okay, so you got a white teacher that's got a classroom full of white kids, and you got these two black girls, and you got them picking cotton. They're uncomfortable picking cotton.
But they weren't the only ones.
They're uncomfortable, though. They're only black people there picking cotton.
Listen, I understand their discomfort with it.
Right.
I'm not invalidating
their
feelings. What I'm saying is, from what I'm getting from this, it does not seem like this teacher was trying to do something racist. Again, it's a different experience, and a conversation could be had. My point is, and this is where our different perspectives are different. My point is, a cotton picking exercise on its own isn't inherently racist. You're saying perhaps it is.
Oh yeah, it definitely is, because
we're not going to agree.
Insensitive.
But would it have been all right if a black teacher did it?
No, I don't think a black teacher would do it, because a black teacher, unless we said okay, and I know I'm going back and forth, but if we say let's have critical race theory. And we're going to teach about this, you know, American history.
Mm-hmm.
then yes. But we already been
beat
over the head for the last 3 months that it was the worst thing that happened since week
break. But Kevin, in June 2020, they include anti-racism for training for staff and faculty and the expansion of multicultural organizations across the district. It is possible, and we don't know. It is possible that school system is teaching some form of critical race theory. And by the way, that word has been bastardized so many times. You know, just because you teach critical race theory doesn't mean you're teaching all of it and everything.
Here's my point. I'll try to make this quick. When you are the only African Americans in a school, predominantly white school.
Well, we don't know if they're the only ones in the school. We're presuming they were the ones in this class, although we don't know that either.
So let's say if there are only blacks in this class, which most likely, if they're only one in the class, most likely they may be the only ones in the school. We don't know, right?
We have no idea. We have no way to know.
So if they are, then they already face obstacles that, you know, you can't imagine.
Of course. Agreed.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
You know, one of the guys on my show, you know, talks about all the time. He went up to he went to an all-white school, and he's an African-American. And he talks about some of the things he went through, being the only black guy in an all-white school, you know?
Yeah, no, it's got to be hard.
It's very hard. So, I mean, that could be – and then, but then you got these two picking cotton.
But
there's some asshole kid in the
back. But here's where we're not seeing eye to eye. I'm not invalidating what you're saying and how these girls felt. I'm not invalidating at all. I truly believe they could have felt that way. What I'm saying is, from what this story is, it doesn't seem like this teacher was trying to be racist. It doesn't seem like this section was slavery. It seems like it's the Industrial Revolution, and the whole class was picking the cotton. Again, I understand that the black girls felt uncomfortable because of the history of African Americans and slavery in this country.
Picking cotton, yeah.
But I
teacher benefited the doubt that she wasn't he or she wasn't.
I mean,
being
this
racist.
this mother wants this teacher disciplined. I don't think the teacher needs to be disciplined.
Maybe the teacher wasn't being racist. Maybe she just was stupid like Como.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm just saying.
No.
We can't say one person's stupid than another person.
I most certainly can. Governor Cuomo was much more stupid than this teacher. So you want us all walking on eggshells?
Look. If I was a teacher. And you was in my class.
Right.
And I was going to do something surrounding the Holocaust. And I knew I only had two Jewish guys or people in my class.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to walk on eggshells and make sure that, first of all, my two Jewish students understand what I'm doing. I would actually pull them into the classroom before I did the project. And explain what's going on because I could argue
that makes me uncomfortable because you're singling me out. I'm just like all your other students.
No,
you can't,
you're not.
But that's how some people feel. Like, I've been the only Jewish person before. And Jews, the reason Jews do.
But you don't have a German teacher talking about the Holocaust either, do you?
But what I'm saying is exactly. Some people. What I'm saying is a lot of people, Jewish people, we just want to fucking blend. So what I'm saying is this teacher might. Maybe the teacher did have the internal conversation. Should I address my two African American students or not before class? And maybe this teacher came to the realization, you know what? Let's not make a big deal of it. I feel like this teacher couldn't win. Now, I feel there's a conversation to have, but I don't feel like this social.
I think she would have won if she would have. Entertained the idea of talking to the black students because it's very sensitive. Black people are very sensitive about these things, Devin. We're very sensitive about cotton picking. We're very sensitive about crow still lives in our being.
We are talking about cotton picking. The machine, which was a huge part of the Industrial Revolution and changed our country and changed the world, was made by an African American man. I mean,
got tired of his ancestors picking cotton.
But we have no context about what was said about Eli Whitney. I mean, it very easily could have been okay, now you see how hard that was, how slow that took you? Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, so nobody had to do the same. We don't have enough here. But I'm just saying, this woman seems like she wants everybody's scalp, and the only one who I think really screwed.
The mom,
I see. And the one who I really think, and again, I don't think the person needs to lose their job, but certainly an apology, was the Skidmore person who used the word segregation. Not helpful.
What state is this in?
What is this, Joe? Washington State, I believe. So okay. It's a fairly liberal state.
Washington State is very, very racist.
I'm not going to blanket a whole state as racist.
I know people from Washington State.
Well, you know racists.
No, I'm not saying people I know are racist. I know black people from Washington State that live here on the East Coast now who talk about.
But again, you're inferring that.
In Washington State. I'm just bringing that up.
Okay, but you're inferring that onto this person. We're assuming a lot of things about this teacher. And again, everybody says it's about the Industrial Revolution. It's about the Industrial Revolution. It's not about slavery. It's post-slavery. Yeah,
so then you should have told these young ladies this before you went and taught.
Maybe they didn't. Go on, Joe. Go on, Joe. Kim and I have been
listening
talking.
Listening to the story, you know, both your points. This is my take on it. And you got to hear me out on this. This was based on the Industrial Revolution. Yes, were, you know, black folks, yeah, they were, you know, treated like slaves and not treated correctly, but also Irish, Italian coming in at that time were not either. Also, like I said, about the cotton gin, she was probably using a demonstration to show how this machine sped up production. Now, moving forward from that, the phone call, what happened with Skidmore should have done is told the woman, listen, we're going to start off the class tomorrow prefacing about cotton, picking cotton, how it was indignant and so on and so forth, that even though that there was, you know, that this machine sped up the production of this, there still were a race of people and races, black community, Italians, that still slaved and toiled in this. So we want to preface that and make that understood, that even though the machines into the Industrial Revolution made the jobs easier, the jobs were still rough, dirty, underpaid, and a lot of times indignant. And I think that's the way they should have handled that, to preface that.
But wait a minute. Now you're talking about underpaid jobs, and before you were bitching about unions in the first segment.
Unions have their place at that time.
Unions still have a place. That's a whole different conversation.
Unions had their place at that time. So, you know, that's a conversation for another day. But still, the working conditions were deplorable. They were horrible for, like I said, for immigrants that came in, for African Americans. So even though this machine sped the process up and we demonstrated how it showed, the working conditions weren't that much better. If they went back and made that a teaching moment, it might have been enough for the mother, and it would have, you know, it would have been a teaching moment.
Well, listen, there's a lot we don't know. I think this this Skidmore person just threw gasoline on the fire. Now, I don't know if this mother could have been calmed down, if this could have been smoothed over, but clearly this Skidmore person made things worse with her segregation comment. Yes. That's
and the kids probably came home and said they made us pick cotton. And with that conversation, no, they made everybody pick.
How did girls?
He's upset. He calls the school. I don't think the school handled the phone call correctly. There was another way to go with it.
Yeah, listen, I think things could have been done better. I think we're you and Joe and I would disagree with Kevin is we don't think the exercise on its own is inherently racist or problematic.
I didn't say it was racist. I said it was insensitive not to kind of address. If these are the only African Americans in this school or community or classroom, then yes, you have to single them out because black people, we even middle age, and it's a shame that middle age kids know about picking cotton. We didn't talk about that. That just goes to show you how deep it is.
Yeah, but everybody should know about it.
Middle-aged kid.
Everybody should know about it.
Well,
this is
saying,
critical race theory. Everybody should know about
middle-aged
it.
Middle-aged kids. Yeah, middle-aged black kids know about it. How many white kids know about picking cotton?
I learned about that in school.
I learned about that. Sure.
You learned about it in school?
Absolutely.
Picking cotton?
Absolutely.
Black people? Because Joe learned that Italian people pick cotton. I didn't know that.
No, Joe was talking about the issues that the minorities had in the Industrial Revolution.
But
no,
that's what I'm saying. Joe, I got to push back on that.
At the Industrial Revolution, not picking cotton. However, when the immigrants came over, they were dubbed lower than, you know, subhuman, and had all these different jobs during the.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. There are some great American traditions: hot dogs, apple pie, and racism. I mean, I love this country, but I always say that when people come here, they always get shit on. I mean, it's a melting pot, but first we got to fucking bust your balls and make your lives miserable. It's just it's.
And you know what the bottom line about what you just said is everybody then. All the minorities that come here do face racism, like Asians and Italians and Hispanics. And then guess what? most of them end up not liking black people
because everybody shits on. That's why. That's what was so good about when the Muslims were in the barrel. Finally, the black people had somebody to shit on. I mean, that's. But yes, that is the American way. Find somebody to shit on.
Well, no, it took.
And don't worry. Everybody always hates the Jews too. Yeah, so
exactly.
Oh yeah, don't forget that. Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
Well, you guys got it bad too. Really bad.
I'm just saying. I think this was blown a little bit out of proportion. I think the administrator could have handled it a lot better than segregation. I think she should apologize. Listen, I used the wrong word. Whatever.
Look, you went from cotton to segregation, all in the same freaking.
Yeah,
story.
that was not great. Not great.
It doesn't look good.
But I don't think she needs to lose her job either. I think she needs to lose her job. No,
but the mother wants
her to lose her job.
So she needs to call the mom and
apologize.
And we don't know this community. Now I got to do some homework when I get home and find out this community.
I'm helping your podcast.
It might be a community.
See, this is why you need me on your podcast.
Exactly. We're going to have you on. It might be a community.
Joe, tune in when five black people yell at the one Jewish guy.
We actually want to have Joe on, too, because we need a Trump supporter.
I'll tune in when five black people yell at the one Trump supporter.
We actually had Paul Bond scheduled to come on, then he canceled the day of the show.
Yeah, I heard about that. You and Paul do not see eye to eye. I heard all about that.
Yeah. So that's why he didn't come on.
I know.
That's going to be respectful. We're respectful.
I don't know. He doesn't think highly of you, and you don't think highly of him, so it's probably best that you guys were separated.
Oh, my.
I'm not getting into other comics drama, but I heard an earful about that. Let's move on to the next story, shall we? Let me play a little audio. So this is the viral clip, this mashup of this pop star Olivia Rodrigo. I don't know who she is, but then again, I shouldn't because I'm not a fucking creep. But apparently the youngsters do know who she is, and she's some sort of pop star. I think she did something about vaccines for Biden in the White House as well. But anyway, this is the mashup. All right, so this is a lengthy story here, but the real short of it is some people are upset because Olivia Rodrigo is not African-American or black, but they're claiming that that is African-American vernacular. There's a lot here. We'll get into it.
I thought it was African-American I was listening to. She's not African-American?
No.
Wow.
She's Filipino, I think?
Wow.
Teen pop star. You be tripping. Ooh. Teen pop You
everybody,
be tripping.
Everybody bites off of us.
Kevin, you crazy AF. Anyway, teen pop star Olivia Rodrigo is the latest non-black celebrity to face criticism for speaking in a black scent. By the way, I love that word. And using AAVE, African-American Vernacular English, who joins others in being called out for the same offense, including Billie Eilish, Iggy Azalea, Ariana Grande. I didn't know Ariana Grande wasn't black. Was she Latina?
Yeah, she's Latino.
Awkwafina and her crazy rich Asian character.
You pronounced that. I saw that coming. I'm like, oh boy.
Because she had a show on Comedy Central. That's the only way.
Oh.
That's the only reason I knew.
Awkwafina.
She's got a show on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
She was apparently Dasani was fucking taken. So her mom named her Awkwafina. And a controversial video mashup resurfaced last week. Rodrigo, who is Filipina American, speaks in a way that is commonly known as black vernacular, using forced phrases like "I be trending," "AF," and "y'all." There's a lot of people in the South who would argue that "y'all" is a white people thing, sparking accusations of cultural appropriation. Rodrigo has not publicly addressed the criticism. She said, "You all be tripping." No. And a request for comment by Yahoo Life to Rodrigo's publicist did not receive a response. We're going to ignore this shit. Still, some fans stood up for the teen, wondering if she really deserves such criticism for using slang like a, quote, regular kid. But DeAndre A. Miles, Hercules, a doctoral student in linguistics at the University University of California, Santa Barbara calls such defenses very tired and predictable, noting that people say she's not hurting anybody, but in a society with such stark economic and social inequality, to be creating wealth by using black language and corporal and culture is reprehensible, and it is meaningful. And Elvis rolled over in his grave and goes, well, I never. It's that he was the first, I guess. Is that economic divide, say many experts, that the heart of why appropriating language or fashion or music or hairstyles or anything else is problematic. Still, Miles Hercules said the Rodrigo situation is almost a non-event, but apparently it's still an event because we're reading it now, because this is so common and so old and so tired.
Amazing News made our show.
Yeah, it's a non-event, but it's got a whole big fucking spread. That it didn't register to me as surprising or anything. It is what I've come to expect to see. Well, how many fucking pop stars are you looking at, you creep? I think of language and culture as inseparable. Part of the problem is how people discuss such instances of appropriation, being reactive case by case rather than looking at the systemic inequalities behind the issue, the researcher and many others say. I don't find there to be a sophisticated debate about cultural appropriation in the media. British critic and writer Afua Hirsch, you did not expect that last name after that first name, told George...
Absolutely not.
Afua Hirsch told George Chesterton in a GQ UK in September 2020 story about Adele being photographed in a Jamaica flag bikini and Bantu knots. But she got junk in that trunk, so it's good.
Yeah,
it's
she less. Looked, she looked good. She looked good.
It's less the act and more the ignorance behind its that issue. By the way, I don't think anybody's flag.
She's dating a brother right now, too.
Good for her. Get that Anaconda. I don't think any country's flag should be on the back of anybody's ass or coochie or balls. But that's just me. When people worry, yeah, they're burning the flag, but it looks lovely up her ass. I'm like, really? Okay. That's just me, though. Chesterton wrote further, quoting Hirsch, who said, I'm often asked to come on TV whenever a pop star wears cornrows to defend the idea that I would like to police their hairstyle. There's little interest in the broader picture of imperial racism and white supremacy that forms the context, so it ends up being a reductive conversation about whether it's okay for white people to do something, which is not my business. Miles Hercules, who uses they-them pronouns, why do they have to tell me that? Echoes that, noting, I am very rarely interested in the individual, but more in the structural level, because racial inequality is rarely individual. As an example, they point to platforms like TikTok, where they're actually censoring black content and boosting white content that's being stolen. Due to those types of inequalities, they say, we have to step in on a structural level. I don't know if that's true or not, but it would seem like your beef, if that is the case, would be with the Chinese. Because that is a Chinese fucking app, TikTok. That's not American. So if we're going to be pissed at somebody about TikTok, be pissed at the Chinese. Anyway, what is a black scent? Miles Hercules says it is a register of speech that appropriates features of what gets called African-American English, or Ebonics, often at a syntax or grammar level. It's rarely appropriated by rhythm or intonation, easy for me to say, because those are the hardest to acquire. So when someone says something sounds cringy, as with Rodrigo, they add, I think what they're attuning to is a rhythm that sounds very foreign or not native. It sounds just kind of off, but I present Exhibit A, Mr. Kevin Lee, who thought she sounded good as fuck. Good,
I thought she sounded like a sister.
Yeah, so they're saying they don't sound accurate, and Kevin's like, no, I thought that girl was black, so who knows? I don't know what she sounded like. They kind of throw in this word or grammar into what otherwise is like a white, relatively standard kind of accent, so cherry-picking individuals to sound cool. And if you need to know what a white stereotypical accent is, I suggest you turn into the BET's Comic View in the mid-90s and hear any random comic go, and black people sound like this, and white people sound like, I'm going to go dancing now. For your stereotype.
I was on that show. I didn't do that routine.
No, you have a bowling ball to juggle, my friend. You got shit up in the air and blow torches and shit. You couldn't be bothered. But all the other black comics... Lauren Michelle Jackson, author of White Negroes, When Cornrows Were in Vogue and Other Thoughts on Cultural Appropriation, explained the black scent in a 2018 Vulture essay that examined the speech of Awkwafina as well as the character Peak Lynn. Sliding in and out of a grammar that speeds past certain consonants, utilizes the habitual B, and takes on a twang with danks and struggles of plenty. Awkwafina has inspired the resurrection of dreaded portmanteau, reserved for non-black people with black voices. I dare any of these fucking people, whatever they're called, to read these words. These are hard words. Hardly seen since Iggy Azalea could claim Song of the Summer Black Scent, she wrote Peak Lynn's flirtation with black vernacular, along with the character's general swagger, cliches, the case, and another buzzword enters the frame. Appropriation, a word that now commonly connotates knowing cultural theft. When it's usage is wrong, Jackson noted, it's feeling an informed suspicion better felt in the bones than cross-referenced with a grammarian. Not because black languages lack their own grammar, but because so writes linguist J.L. Dillard in the landmark 1972 study Black English. We could diagram black English, but we could know no more about it afterward than we did before. Either you know or you don't. Still, she pointed out, it's complicated. A certain millennial cool kid identity is already predicated on basic appropriations that get overlooked when every case becomes exemplary instead of evidentiary, she wrote. It's all very messy. The power makes it easy, but treating the blacks as something authentically black and stolen doesn't make it easier. They also keep on confusing millennials with Generation Z. They're not the same. Like, I think like the oldest millennial is like 40 or something. So people got to stop with that shit.
Yeah, right. So the
Anyway, even less clear notes Guardian story about Riley Keough's character in the new film Zola are Hollywood portrayals of characters with black sense. Literal blackface is now a very obvious form of racist appropriation, but when it comes to linguistics, it's more difficult to know where to draw the line, explains the piece. The two used to go hand in hand, but African-American vernacular English, to give it its formal term, is constantly feeding into the mainstream. Let's see. Let's move ahead a little bit. The bottom line is economics. But because the problem is systemic, many point out that the biggest issue is that it leads the appropriators to profit off of the language that can actually be disadvantageous for those to whom it's native. And that's something that folks like Rodrigo appear to understand, as evidenced, Miles Hercules says, by the fact that she understands when a black set brings cool points and when it's not appropriate to use, such as on a recent trip to the White House to encourage youth vaccinations. So the excuse that someone didn't know language is appropriated is BS. Ignorance related to that abdication of responsibility, Miles Hercules adds. Not only is it nonsense, I think it's intentional, and it's cultural amnesia, and it's part of how racism and white supremacy function, by forgetting the things that do roots behind them. All right. Here's my take on this thing. I would understand what they were saying, but it's not just a black thing. Hear me out on this.
Okay.
When Madonna moved to England, all of a sudden she had a British accent. When comedian Dan Whitley or Whitney wasn't making money, all of a sudden he became Larry the Cable Guy and had a Southern accent. When Mike Tyson, who grew up on the mean streets of Brooklyn and, you know, did not have much of a formal education but wanted to seem smarter to white people, he was using words that he had no business using because he couldn't say them or know what they mean.
That's funny. It's true.
It's true. You know what all these people have in common? We make fun of their fucking silly asses. You know what? If you want to make fun of Olivia Rodrigo for using this because she doesn't talk the way, that's fine. And I will also say this. I can only speak for myself. When I play the South over a period of weeks, sometimes I get a twang. In my younger days when I was playing Black Rooms, I'm sure I used some black slang or vernacular to get through it. We do that when Kevin is talking to his friends or talking to a booker. He might speak differently. We do things to get along. I think these things are more prevalent when we're younger.
I do speak differently.
Yeah.
I was like, can I get off my knees now?
No, suck that cock. Well, I think these things happen when you're younger. I think when you get older, for the most part, you get more comfortable in your skin and you go, all right, this is me. This is who I am. And I'm just going to speak. But people do these things. They appropriate. They borrow of all races. I understand why the black community is sensitive to this, and historically...
You're about to find out why.
Well, listen, historically, yes, black culture has been ripped off. Listen, when Vanilla Ice tried it, we all made fun of Vanilla Ice's ass. When Eminem did it, nobody said shit, because Dr. Dre gave him his blessing. And also, he came from that. He came from that upbringing. You're also subject to...
He was good. He's great.
Yeah, he was great.
I mean, put those two guys in the same sentence, you should get struck by lightning right now.
But my other point is, you're also a product of where you grew up and what type of pop culture you listen to and watch. If you are always listening to rap music, whether you're black or white, and it's influential on you, you're going to talk that way. If you're always listening to hair metal, you know, whether you're black or white, you might think a mullet's a good idea. You're kind of like influenced by what you're surrounded with, what you grew up with.
And my take would be the same thing. She's a young girl. I mean, rap music, rap culture is popular. She was just talking with her friends. Talking with that's not a problem. And it's also being genuine. I mean, she was genuine. She didn't mean that. But there's also people like Kevin. If I say, hey, my man, what's up? Number one, I just made an ass of myself, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, you're only an ass of it. You only made an ass of yourself. Like, come on, Kevin, give me some skin. Then you're making an ass of yourself and you're dating yourself.
No, and that same thing. I talked to you like two gentlemen. Hi, pal. How are you? Blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah. He is talking with the friends who are in, you know, that are part of that young culture that, you know, where rap music is. And she's talking that way. And for people to get bent out of shape, it's in the context of the situation. And the relationship, like David said, the relationship you have with that person, and in the context of that, there was no malice here.
And I don't think it is malice. I think it's cultural conditioning. And what I mean by that, I just think that African-Americans, like David said, we've been ripped off so much over the years from everything. But we get criticized for being ourselves. African-American people get fired from their jobs or lose their jobs or don't even get hired for having cornrows, you know? There's been this big thing a couple of years ago about the UFC girls, mostly white girls and Spanish girls, now coming to the ring wearing cornrows. And it became this big thing with white women now getting cornrows because UFC is big now, and they see these girls fighting with cornrows, so now a lot of white girls are wearing cornrows. So now black people are going, well, wait a minute, when I wore cornrows, I couldn't get a job. I got told I couldn't wear my hair like that to work, you know, stuff like that. So it's more to it than...
See, I think that's the problem.
There's more to it than what you see.
Well, listen, this is why
I'm here.
But you're making a much different and more sophisticated, and I think a better argument than what the quote-unquote experts did in this. Because the real problem is, wait a minute,
I'm an expert at being black.
Well, you've been it most of your life.
Yeah. And also context of situation as well.
Well, the real issue is here. We get paid less because we're black. We get fired because we're black. But you want to appropriate our culture?
Well, that's
the issue.
That's what Paul Mooney used to say. Everybody wants to be black until they see a cop behind them. You know, so you know everybody wants to ride around. Look, that's what Paul Mooney said, and it was a great line. You know, and it's true. Look, I saw two guys today at the gas station this morning. I went to fill up my car, and I see these two Spanish guys and a white guy, and they're next to me, and they're in what we call a hoopty. It's a beat-up car, and they're blasting this rap music. And the N-word's coming out their car, and they're at a gas station, and nobody's paying attention to them but me, and I'm disgusted, you know, by what I see. Because I know that if a black guy pulls up in that car blasting N-word, the white people going to the gas station and pumping their gas are going to give them the dirty look. So it's a double standard. So white girls can wear the cornrows. Spanish guys could pull up. A white guy could pull up and blast in rap music with the N-word.
Kevin, you can wear Dockers and a cardigan. We're not taking that away from you.
I think I have some Dockers on, actually.
If you would like, if you would like a Barry Manilow T-shirt, I'll be happy to get that for you, Kevin.
Oh, I need one.
I love
Barry Manilow.
That's my point, though.
I can pull up blasting Barry Manilow. Ready. People gonna look at me like I'm crazy too, right? And I've done that actually.
Actually, it would be more black people looking at you like you were crazy.
That is true. I've actually had a country song. Had a country song on my ringtone. I heard this song on the radio. I thought it was cool. I Shazammed it. I put the ringtone on my phone. It was a country song. I liked it. But when I'm in the store, like I went down to the hood one time to get some chicken from this place called that has real good fried chicken. I went to get chicken on a Saturday afternoon. My phone in my back pocket, it goes off. Patricia's calling me. Country music's blasting out my back pocket. And brothers look at me like, what the hell is going on with this dude? You know, it was very weird. But
yeah, I'll give you a story like that. When I was in my fraternity, there was one African American, Mark. I was very close with him. He was older than us. He was a Navy veteran. He was older, and he was a big dude. He was also a cheerleader, but he was a big dude. But he liked hair metal, and he hung out with like me and a couple of my friends. We actually had the Mad Dog Club, the Mad Dog 2020, when that was a thing.
Yeah.
We would all drink Mad Dog together, me, him, and two other white guys. So one night we pull up into my car, Camaro, T-tops off, Mark's in the car. We're pulling up to this, I don't know, this like little fucking hood corner liquor store in Patterson, blasting Cherry Pie. I'm like, Warren, shit.
That's funny.
So you know if there was brothers around, they would have given him a look like,
what the fuck is going on?
But you know what? But here's the point. Why can't people just like what they like? Why can't people, you know, why do you have to get a dirty look because you like country music?
That is true. I think, but getting back to the copycat thing, I think it also You know, it depends on the audience she's trying to reach, too. I mean, if she's trying to get...
Well, this seemed like it was a private conversation.
And then it got out and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's been a few people that you know, as you pointed out, that got caught heat for that. And I think black people just say, hey, man, you can't be us. If you're going to be us, then give us some credit. Well, give us some credit for being us.
Well, you should know.
Just give us some freaking credit for being us, Elvis. I mean, it goes back to, you know, Elvis who ripped off black singers and never gave them credit.
But here's the difference. You know? Here's the difference. Nobody knew what Elvis did at the time. Now everybody knows. Everybody knows where you're borrowing the cornrows from, the dreads. I talk about my act where she's borrowing, you know, your musical influences. We all know.
Right.
You know, it would seem like Elvis was the first, at least the first to get really big with it. Yeah. Nobody knew, which makes it the crime that it was.
Yeah,
because
you
had these black musicians who created this music who were fucking struggling.
Jackie Wilson and guys like that. Yeah,
yeah, but this is...
Throw Led Zeppelin in there. Led Zeppelin on the first couple, I mean, they stole a lot of stuff from black blues artists.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but so we're kind of at that point where we're used to hearing our music, you know, black people. I mean, people just copying your style or trying to look.
But you know,
I mean,
it goes
back to Dick Clark.
But to be
Dick Clark, who came up with
the most sampled musician is?
Who?
Billy Squire. The rap artist sampled Billy Squire of all people. You can't get more white than white rocker Billy Squire. Look up the little
video. After that last video, the
video where he's prancing around in like leg warmers. You can't get more white than that. And he's the most sampled artist. So, yes, yes, the white artist stole from the black, but now it goes from the black artist. Now it goes back and forth. We're all borrowing from each other, which is good.
Yeah,
that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with it. I see why black people are upset about some of the things that happened, though.
But I don't think
forget that we are still, and I pointed this out in another story, we are some sensitive fucking people, man. And that's just the way it is. It's just
fair.
We've been crapped on for 400 years, man. So after being crapped on so much, you still feel crapped on in year 2021. It won't go away just because it's new people living now. I mean, it's still. We just feel crapped on by everybody and everything. So, yeah, we take stuff personal. I mean, me personally, do I have a problem with it? Not really. I get it, you know. I know. I see Spanish girls trying to talk black. I see white girls trying to talk black. I mean, but I know that we can't do that, you know. As a comedian, when I show up at a club, if Davin books me to come to his room, I'm going to show – I can't show up. I go to clubs, man. I'm getting emails for dress codes. You got to dress up. I mean, you get a dress code in your email from a booker. You get to the club and you're dressed appropriate. And then the white kid walks in. He looks like he have a cup.
Well,
in
I
got to
tell you, the white people, because I get those same emails.
He walks in like he had a cup in his hand.
Yeah, but that's just a comic.
There's nothing.
That's just a comic being an asshole because we all get the same emails.
That's not true.
I get the same emails. Okay. We work from the same people. Where it says dress up, this, that, the other thing. What you're describing is a comic being a comic, which is usually an asshole.
Yeah. Because we also got recently. Played the Carolina Comedy Club, and I didn't get the email, but Coleman Green, who was there the week after me, comedian Coleman Green, got an email saying no Trump jokes. Now, I didn't get that email, but he got an email from Lynn Kerr saying no Trump jokes, you know, and he asked me about it. I go, no, I didn't get that email from Lynn, but, you know, I've been headlining them for a long time.
See, Joe, so this is what I talk about all the time. There's no more fucking snowflakes and comedy fans than a fucking Trump supporter. I never got an email. No Clinton jokes, no Obama jokes, no George W. Bush jokes, only no fucking Trump jokes.
Yeah, that was it, man. That was the conversation. No Trump jokes in the email. So. And he asked all the comics, by the way. And the reason I brought this up because he's a headliner and he's African American, if you don't know him. But the other guy, his feature act and the MC were white. They never got the email.
Sure I'd get the email.
They never got the email. So you know, I mean, it's always
Harrisburg. You can't do political stuff or anything.
But you found it the hard way, right?
Yeah, I found it. Yeah, 20 minutes before I go on stage, nothing controversial. What does that mean? Well, I mean, if comedy's done right, some of this shit's controversial. I'm calling my wife. She's like, do you want me to read your notebooks to your old notebooks? I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? I figured it out because Len didn't pass on the fucking letter to me, the email to me. We got to stop coddling the audience at comedy clubs. If it's a restaurant or a VFW or something, that's a little different maybe. At a comedy club, stop it. You're there to hear comedy. You might hear some things that make you uncomfortable. You know what that's called? Good fucking comedy. Richard Pryor said a lot of shit that made people uncomfortable. So did George Carlin. Bill Cosby didn't say a lot of shit that made people uncomfortable. He just made them uncomfortable after the fucking show. So pay...
All drinks on me.
Yeah, exactly. Pick your poison, fuckers. Do you want the guy who's going to tackle hard subjects, or do you want the guy who's going to show you how hard he is in the fucking green room after the show? Pick your poison.
Yeah, the guy that's going to sit there and tell you how to be a good family man, then try to fuck everything in the green room.
Yeah, yeah. The guy who's going to bitch about black people wearing their pants around their ass, meanwhile his pants is around his fucking ankles while a girl's passed out. Please, thank you. No.
I'm hoping for Wanda Sykes in Atlantic City. And we're at the Borgata and the Music Box Theater, sold out. And I watch people walk out on her. That's probably spent like $150 a ticket because
she didn't
does,
get the email from Len.
She does. She does. She only does about 10 minutes on Trump.
10 minutes too much.
But she does an hour and 90 minutes on. I mean, she does a 90-minute show. So
yeah, 10 minutes.
10 minutes of Trump, and she lost about maybe 25 people that spent $150 to get in, like, because they came to see the black girl from TV. They don't know her act.
Well, the difference is Wanda Sykes can afford to do that. The three of us can't. Wanda Sykes, yeah. Fuck them. We go, oh, shit, there's going to be a call.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. But yes, I mean, I don't, you know, we talk about snowflakes, and God knows I go after the liburals enough, and Joe goes after the liberals, and Pipple go after the liberals, but I swear to God, the Trumpster, such a fucking snowflake. Stop it! Stop it! He's always been a pussy, and now you're being a pussy. And he likes to grab pussies. And I'm going to talk about him grabbing pussies. And you know what? I'm going to do it in a way that makes you laugh, if you can get past the crying, you little bitch. And then we'll do some.
I think what it is, is that, and it's not my opinion, it's my observation, is that if you're a true dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter, Trump's, you know, they might have the attitude that he's constantly being bashed in the media all the time and never gets a fair shake, never gets a fair voice. Now you're at the comedy club, and now you have a comic bashing of, and you can't, if you get up and walk away from the TV set, you don't really make your point. If you get up and walk out of the show, you feel you're making your point because you don't want to hear this anymore.
All right, Joe. Joe, that's fine. But don't in the name say in the next breath go, free speech! The socialist liberals are trying to take away our free speech! And you just walked out on the comic doing a Trump joke because they had free speech. That's my problem. The hypocrisy. And I see.
Yeah, that's my problem, too. And probably with Wanda Sykes, it's like you get these guys that just came in, you don't know who she is. And you know, she'll start doing that stuff. Well, I'm offended, but it's Wanda Sykes, you know. And if,
well, you know,
it's only 10 minutes of her act. She just makes it quick. I mean, she's gay. She's black. She has an issue with a lot of stuff that Republicans put forth.
You know?
Listen,
you know?
I'm going to stick up for the audience here. In their defense, there's no possible way to look up what any of us do on stage, get an idea of what it is. There's no. If only there was a place where there was online videos of some.
YouTube. Oh, well, you're being sarcastic. Okay.
You dumb motherfucker, yo. Really, Kevin? Really?
Well, people go see stars. They don't look them up on YouTube.
No,
they
but
look you and I up on YouTube.
We can all be looked up. And you can't tell me you're a fan of Pryor or Carlin and then walk out because a comic makes you uncomfortable. I love Carlin, but that comic offended me. Carlin offended everybody.
Careers today either.
Yeah.
What?
They wouldn't have careers today either.
Well, that's fair,
Carlin
too.
Carlin and Pryor, but again, and Sam Kinison and Dice Clay will be working at Walmart.
Then don't tell me what a big proponent of free speech you are, and you can't hear fucking, and you can't handle
those
a joke.
Those are great comics who would not have careers today if they came up.
Most of them wouldn't.
Even Dave Chappelle, if he wasn't Dave Chappelle, wouldn't have a career. He came out on stage talking about kicking a woman in the pussy. He can't do that, you know. I mean, he could do it because he's Dave Chappelle. We would have got fired out the comedy club for doing that.
Yeah, you do it 1 week. The next week, I get an email. Listen, you can't talk about kicking a woman in the pussy. Exactly. Who did that? Who was the kicking the pussy woman? Who comic? Who did that? But yeah,
you remember Betty's Fireside? I think we've all done that gig, right? And then we come up to and that freaking loony bin. She would come up and go, "All right, don't say cunt." Okay.
I actually did well in that known hellhole, and I used to tell this story in my act. I don't remember it real well now, but there was a story. So a girl comes up to me after the show. This is a true story. And she goes, you know, if I don't like a guy, this is an audience member, if I don't like a guy, when I'm done blowing him, I'll just spit it in his face. And the joke was, I would say, I go, you're all thinking that's disgusting. I'm thinking, wow, I could be a complete asshole. Worst case scenario, I'm still getting a blowjob. But that was the clientele that was at Betty's Fireside. This girl comes up to me and says that. That was Betty's Fireside clientele.
Oh, that was a great story. I forgot the whole story, but it was that Dennis Ross, God rest his soul, was in a Joey Cola, and it was a whole fight, and they're trying to get the money. That play, I tell you, man, you can feel kind of proud that you did that, because that had the reputation of the hell gig of all hell gigs.
Yeah. All right. So we kind of all agree that, you know, this isn't really that big of a deal.
I don't think it's a big deal, you know.
Okay. No.
You know, we've been there,
no,
done that.
Not in
you
the
know.
Context of what this young
we all do it. Know. We all talk. Listen, I curse more on this show than I do in other company, regardless of race or whatever it is. You speak differently in different situations. That's just the way it
is. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, when I, you know, talking on the show, so on this one, I'm in band practice with them. I'm in a rock band. Say, hey, man, what's going on? Yeah, man, that's stoked. I'm stoked for this gig. But you talk differently in that situation. We're rock musicians. That's the way rock
So when I talk to my two black friends, when I get in the car and I'm driving home and I call one of my black friends, am I going to have a different demeanor?
I don't know. I don't, and I really don't care. You can talk to your friends however you want to talk to them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to police how you talk to your friends. I'm not going to be, oh, wow, he really emphasizes the right consonants and vowels. I think he's stealing proper white culture. I don't give a shit. Talk to your friends however you want. The fuck do I care? I got other shit to worry about.
I agree with you guys.
Olivia Rodrigo spoke AF. Who cares?
You know, that would make a good. That would be a good T-shirt. I've got other shit to worry about.
Yeah. All right.
That is a good T-shirt.
Yeah.
I'll be selling them next week.
Good. Somebody should. So Apple wants to sneak into your DMs. Let's do this story. Uh-oh. Apple unveiled plans to scan U.S. iPhones for images of child sexual abuse, drawing applause from child protection groups, but raising concern among security researchers that the system could be misused, including by governments looking to surveil their citizens. The tool designed to detect two detected known images of child sexual abuse called Neural Hash will scan images before they are uploaded to the iCloud. If it finds a match, the image will be reviewed by a human. If child pornography is confirmed, the user's account will be disabled and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children notified. Separately, Apple plans to scan users' encrypted messages for sexually explicit content as a child safety measure, which also alarmed privacy advocates. The detection system will only flag images that are already in the center's database of known child pornography. Parents snapping innocent photos of a child in the bath presumably need not worry, but researchers say the matching tool, which doesn't, quote, see such images, just mathematical fingerprints that represent them, could be put to more nefarious purposes. Matthew Green, a top cryptography researcher at James Hopkins University, warned that the system could be used to frame innocent people by sending them seemingly innocuous images designed to trigger matches for child pornography. That could fool Apple's algorithm and alert law enforcement. Researchers have been able to do this pretty easily, he said, of the ability to trick such systems. Other abuses could include government surveillance of dissidents or protesters. What happens when the Chinese government says, here's a list of files that we want you to scan for, Green asked. Does Apple say no? I hope they say no, but their technology won't say no. Tech companies, including Microsoft, Google, Facebook, and others, have for years been sharing digital fingerprints of known child sexual abuse images. Apple has used those to scan user files stored in its iCloud service, which is not as securely encrypted as its on-device data for child pornography. Apple has been under government pressure for years to allow for increased surveillance of encrypted data, and coming up with the new security measures required Apple to perform delicate balancing act between cracking down on the exploitation while keeping its high-profile commitment to protecting the privacy of its user. But a dejected Electronic Frontier Foundation, the online civil liberties pioneer, called Apple's compromise on privacy protections a shocking about-face for users have relied on the company's leadership in privacy and security. Meanwhile, the computer scientist who more than a decade invented photo DNA, the technology used by law enforcement to identify child pornography online, acknowledged the potential for abuse of Apple's system, but said it was far outweighed by the imperative of battling child sexual abuse. Is it possible? Of course. But is it something that I'm concerned about? No, said Hani Farid, a researcher at the University of California at Berkeley, who argues that plenty of other programs designed to secure devices from various threats haven't seen this type of mission creep. For example, WhatsApp provides users with end-to-end encryption to protect their privacy, but also employs a system for detecting malware and warning users not to click on them. All right. So that's the long and the short of it. So here was this week's poll question. In an effort to combat child sex abuse, Apple plans to scan users' pictures and read their encrypted messages. Do you support Apple doing this? 18% said yes, they support Apple doing this. 82% said nay. I kind of assume that whenever you send a message or a picture, anybody could see it anyway. I kind of assume that, which is why I don't get a lot of apps, because so many of the apps ask for permission for you to access your photos or messages or whatever it is. And
I hope,
you know,
that's not true.
Yeah, they do. That's all one of the things they ask you, and a lot of times we allow them. That being said, I really am not pleased that Apple is doing this. I don't use Apple, but I am not pleased that they are doing this. I think it's a problem where we're just giving them more and more access. On the one hand, you say, you know, we're going to let you have encrypted messages. On the other hand, you say, and we're going to read them too.
I think that I'm kind of on the fence about this. I mean, obviously, you know, with pedophilia, I mean, you destroy a life. However, I just think there's a propensity of a lot of people being falsely accused, especially with the AI on it. You know, I don't feel at this juncture in time of technology, I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay.
I don't think it's a good idea either.
So none of us like this.
No, I don't think it's a good idea. I think our privacy is invaded enough through social media, and this is just another evasion of privacy. I mean, pretty soon we won't be able to go take a piss without a camera on us. I mean, it's going.
I look forward to those days. Now it was mentioned.
Nobody told me this.
You're gonna have a 3-camera shoot while you poop. Now I didn't read this, but in the article, this is only going to be on U.S. iPhones. My question is, why only U.S. iPhones? If we're going to do this, if Apple's going to do this, do it on all iPhones.
Only on U.S. phones?
Yes.
There's definitely something going on.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Well, listen, I know for a fact there's creeps all over the world. So, if this...
yeah, more so, you know, other parts of the world.
I don't know about more so or less so. I just know they exist.
Yeah.
Why anybody asking these questions other than you, Davin?
Well, you know, that's why I'm here, Kevin. That's why I'm here in my basement.
Somebody got to be asking these questions. Exactly. That's a good question. I mean, why just the U.S.?
All right.
Welcome to Drunks in the News.
So this week's Benjamin Franklin drinking term, these are synonyms for being drunk that Benjamin Franklin himself came up with. Every time we do one of these stories, we like to share the audience. A term that is close to mine and Joe's heart. The term this week is flushed. Flushed.
Flushed?
Yeah, we were writing a script called Flush, and it got flushed. So if you were drunk, yeah, you got flushed. So yeah. The person we were writing with, we can't reach anymore. So that's kind of interesting.
Hey, well, make a long story short, it looks like the weight of the world is done in its form. Looks like they're coming out with a show almost exactly like it, we found out last night.
Ugh, sorry.
So,
All right. So keeping up with the technology, anti-drunk driving technology may become a standard in all cars in the next few years under one of the provisions baked into the $1 trillion federal infrastructure bill. The 2,702-page bill under negotiation also includes a provision that would require manufacturers to equip new vehicles with an alert system to let drivers know that kids or other passengers have been left in the backseat after the engine's been turned off. The new technologies would target alcohol-related car crashes and increasing incidents of kids dying in hot cars. The bill defines a preventive technology for impaired driving as anything that could passively and accurately detect if someone's blood alcohol concentration is above the legal limit. To ensure the prevention of alcohol-impaired driving fatalities, advanced drunk and impaired driving prevention technology must be the standard equipment in all new passenger motor vehicles, the bill states. Stephanie Manning, a chief government affairs official for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, stressed that the bill would require passive technology. We're not talking about breathalyzers. We're not talking about ignition interlocks. Those are punitive measures. You just get in your car and you go, and it doesn't hassle the sober driver. It doesn't hassle anybody unless there's a real problem. Knock it off, you're drunk! A real problem with being able to safely operate the vehicle. It just nags in your ear. Did you have to have that last drink? Look at you. Look at you. You're a mess. You have a meeting in the morning. It's just a fucking nagging voice. That's the passive. Smart technology available or in development can detect erratic driving, engage drivers' distraction by measuring when a driver's eyes leave the road. Sensors can measure blood alcohol content by touch on a steering wheel or by ambient air. If the bill becomes law as written, the Secretary of Transportation would have several years to implement the rule with a specific process for notification to officials if there are any delays. There were more than 10,000 alcohol-related deaths in 2019. The text of the bill reads that alcohol is estimated to be a factor in a third of all highway fatalities. The trade organization, the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, praised the additional technology and other provisions of the bill to make funding available to the states to eliminate multiple substance-impaired driving. We've seen a rise in the total traffic deaths during the pandemic. It's now critically imperative that we pass strong traffic safety legislation. All right. So that's the gist of it. You know, I don't really have a problem with this one if it's passive technology, and I'll tell you why. Because I kind of look like the seatbelt thing, you know, where if you don't have put in your seatbelt, it just dings, dings, dings. Yeah. It doesn't stop you from driving. It just fucking nags. So it makes you put on the seatbelt. Yeah. So if they come up with something like that where they can determine if somebody is over the legal limit of being drunk and there's just like a ding, 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 it's not a problem. And, you know, listen, there's all too many kids dying in fucking back seats. I almost left my daughter in the back seat. When they're really small and they're asleep, you kind of forget about them. You're enjoying the peace and the quiet until you close the door and go, oh, fuck, where's the kid? Then you go, oh, shit, I got to go back. But unfortunately, not enough people do that. They leave the kid in the fucking car.
Oh, we care about kids now. Okay.
I care about kids.
Well, I didn't say you did, and I said America.
I think a lot of people care about kids. I don't think anybody wants a fucking an over easy child in the back seat. You know, nobody wants an exploded kid all fucking sweaty in the back seat making a fucking a little stain. No, but I don't really have that. I don't have a problem with this. Now you could say it's government overreach, Big Brother. Yeah, but they already do that shit anyway.
Joe,
I think the technology. If you can get the technology right, I mean, it detects driving engage erratic. I mean, if you're having a problem with your steering or something like that, the car might shut off and you're not drunk. And if the sensors might be off, it could be a problem. I mean, like with safety belt, yeah, it's negative. You put it on, it's a definite. You stop short, here's the belt goes off, regardless. An airbag, the bag goes off. With this, I don't think there's enough there to measure what's going on. Now, with that being said, with drunk drivers and stuff like that, something's got to be done. Where the technology would be welcome. Also, with kids being left in the car, the same would go there. So I think that as the technology progresses, where it's very accurate and you get it really down, then that would be a good idea. But until we really can demonstrate that this technology is accurate, I think that it'll be a little bit of a watch.
Well, I think that's assumed. They're assuming that this is very precise. Because if it's erratic or it's easily broken or easily fooled, it doesn't do any good, and nobody's going to want this.
So but isn't every car, they're going to have a standard in every car?
In all new cars.
So people who never drink or smoke or drive under the influence.
It'll never go off. It'll never go off. It's passive, so it alerts you. So if you never drink and drive, you'll never hear that alert. Theoretically, you know, if you do drink and drive and you're above the alcohol limit, theoretically, you'll hear somebody go, "Knock it off, stupid!" You know, there'll be something there to let you know. Now Joe's talking about where they would actually shut down the car. That's going further than apparently.
I think you already had that.
Well, that's if you're like
my brother has this already on his car in Florida. He got pulled over. He was living in Arizona, and he got a drunk driving DWI, and then he moved to Florida 3 months later, where he lives down in Tampa area, and he went to get his Florida license, but he got his report from Phoenix, from Arizona, and they made him put the thing on his car. So now he has to do a breathalyzer in his car before he drives. Or shuts down.
Well, but they're saying this isn't that your brother has that because he had a DUI. They're saying this isn't that. This is just, you know, because nobody here has been convicted of anything. It just lets you know if you're too drunk. I guess kind of like your wife. You know, yeah, you know, there'll just be a voice go, I think you've had too much. Do you really think you should be driving now? Couldn't we call an Uber? Like, maybe they'll just fucking nag you.
Set that off, like the wrong cologne, maybe?
Well, they got to test it. I mean, that,
deodorant.
You know, that's the Joe's point. You got to get it right.
Well, that's the thing. And also, you know, and like I said, you know, if you have comments that, like, I was at the club, oh, God, about 3 months ago. And I walked out, and I'm like, I can't drive. So I pulled over, and I slept it off. There were some people that you know, especially with maybe a drinking problem, that don't feel that way and would drive anyway. You know, so maybe the vehicle being shut down is a good idea. You know, a sensor that goes off, like if your belt is not engaged, I don't think they would pay attention or could care less about it.
Oh, I think you'd pay attention. Because I don't like driving with my seatbelt, and that fucking thing makes me put on the seatbelt all the time. Now, my 88 Camaro didn't have that belt, so I could drive however I wanted without a seatbelt. Damn the laws.
Yeah.
Damn be the law. No, I think it would work. I mean, we got to see what the technology is. But it seems like none of us really have a problem with the quote-unquote overreach. It seems like we're all fine with it if they can get the technology right.
If it saves lives, then it's good, then it works, you know. If it saves lives, it sounds like something that would save lives. But I don't know. People will find a way to get around it, I'm sure.
Maybe. Yeah. All right, let's do some turbulent air.
This is your captain speaking. If you look to your right, you'll see a beautiful, serene river. If you look to your left, majestic mountains. Uh-oh, straight ahead, it seems like we have a big black cloud. We're going to need you to fasten your seatbelts, folks, because it looks like we're in for a turbulent flight.
On Friday, Jenny Grundahl flew from Phoenix to San Diego carrying a souvenir, a cardboard sign she wanted to frame when she got home to Southern California, read Arizonans' Cone Biden with a cactus and was made by an artist named Javier Torres. It marked an accomplishment for the labor organizer, outreach to Latinos in Arizona to vote for Joe Biden for president in 2020. Grundahl serves on the executive board of Laborers International Union of North America, representing workers in California and Arizona. She also volunteered for the Biden campaign and a friend had given her the sign for the hours she worked. I worked very hard to register Latino voters, and Latinos showed up in Arizona when blue, explaining why it meant so much to her. When she got to the gate, Grundahl said a Southwest Airlines employee told her, "Many customers are offended by your sign." The agent asked her to either cover it with white paper and tape or to fold it, put it underneath her seat. Then Grundahl asked what would have happened if she had been wearing a t-shirt supporting Biden and Vice President Harris, to which the flight attendant said, "Then you'd have to show your tits." No, she didn't say that. the agent told her that she would have had to turn it inside out to board the flight. Really? Oh, instead of covering up the sign, Grundahl folded it up and placed it under the seat. As Americans return to the skies during the pandemic, they are facing unruliness among fellow passengers. Flight attendants are getting the worst of it as passengers become violent and refuse to mask mandates. But flyers may also be reminded of other disruptions, the arbitrary power over passenger dress code and what they can bring on board. Airlines have long been unable to enforce this, but in this political climate, it could include signage and other memorabilia. I'm looking around at the gate and I'm thinking, how many of you, was it 20 out of 110? How offended were you? What did you say? She told the Washington Post several days after the incident. How could people have such a visceral reaction to seeing the name of our president on a sign? Try fucking telling a joke about the last guy. She found herself physically shaking at the confrontation, despite the fact she said the gate attendant was very nice. Grundahl would have understood had she been told the sign was too big or she'd been actively campaigning, but she said that was not what she was told by the airline. It's in Spanish. I just looked around and I thought about humanity in general. How devastatingly horrible that someone saw a name or a different language on a sign that I'm carrying and stood in line to complain to the airline staff to the point that they had to come complain to me and ask me not to bring this board, Grundahl said. And I said, have you met us? Southwest would not comment directly on the situation, but the airline denied it would censor political expression. We pride ourselves on providing a welcoming, comfortable, and safe environment for all customers and employees regardless of political belief until shit gets hard. We're in conversations with the customer to address her concerns, and we hope to welcome her back on a future Southwest flight. Nobody wants to go back on Southwest. Spokesman Dan Lansen said in an email. Grundahl tweeted at Southwest about the incident on Monday, but she did not hear from the airline until after the Washington Post contacted the company for comment. Oh, fuck, the media's got it. So far, they've only reached out to say they have heard about her complaint. Legal experts said the incident was probably a one-off that occurred because decisions about what customers can bring or where on board are at the discretion of individual employees. Each airline has a contract of carriage which you agree to when you purchase a ticket, but it can be ambiguous. Delta says it can keep a passenger off a plane if they're a tire, creates an unreasonable risk of offense or annoyance. annoyance to other passengers. Southwest and JetBlue say clothing cannot be lewd, obscene, or patently offensive. I just think Randell ran into a buzzsaw with a flight attendant who was trying to placate some unhappy people, said Tom Demetrio, a Chicago-based lawyer who represented David Chow, a passenger who was dragged off a United flight in 2017. Since the case, Demetrio said he has received over 1,000 complaints centered around the actions of either a flight attendant or a gate agent. 100% of the time, they are backed up by the pilot who has the ultimate say. If you have an issue where a flight attendant is questioning you or making fun of you, play along because he or she wins. No use in quibbling or protesting. What if it's a Chicago Cubs shirt and you've got a bunch of Yankee fans on the plane? We don't really give a shit about the Cubs. Or they're going to whine to a flight attendant? No, not really. Well, we might fucking beat you up. Make him turn his shirt inside out? No, unless it's a Red Sox shirt. In 2012, a woman who was working on an abortion provider was asked to cover her t-shirt on American Airlines flight, and American Airlines spokesman said the flyer was asked to cover up because the shirt contained an expletive. Later that year, graduate student Arijit Guha was taken off a Delta flight in Buffalo because his t-shirt said, "Terrorists, gonna kill us all," he said. The misspelled shirt was satirical and mocked federal screening policies that he said racially profiled. The pilot countered that it scared fellow passengers. Yes. Because I tell you one thing about terrorists, they fucking let you know right before the plane's going to go down with a comedic t-shirt. It's never the fucking knives or the package cutters or guns. It's a pithy t-shirt. Again, there is little passengers can do because rules can be interpreted unevenly. Contracts of carriage are written in broad language that makes these determinations particularly subjective, so that one person's behavior, clothing on one flight may not be considered offensive on another. That turned out to be true for Grandel, who flew from Orange County in California back to Phoenix just 4 days later on Southwest. She didn't have the sign, but she wore her union shirt for a Biden-Harris mask on her flight without incident. These guidelines are often justified for safety reasons. Airlines can claim offensive attire or behavior can cause conflicts on board, so the airlines need to police problems. All right, that's the gist of it.
I can't wait to speak on this.
Well, we're going to give Joe we'll give Joe first crack because he wrote a blog on it. Then I will give you crack.
Okay. Let me hear
it. Have at it, Joe.
Basically, the airline is wrong. I mean, it's not offensive what she had. And basically, he was saying, well, it doesn't agree with our rules on what to carry on a plane. And basically, I looked into the rules, and basically anything that's deemed a hazardous material can't be brought on as a carry-on. This was not a hazardous item. It was also not an offensive item. And Southwest was wrong. Now, the reason I think that they were adamant about it is that people lately have lost their fucking mind on planes. And I think that the stewardess or the flight attendant was worried about a confrontation out of somebody that might have got bent out of shape. But that's tough shit. This is a freedom of speech issue. And Southwest says, well, we're not silencing political opinion. Yes, you are, right here. You know, so Southwest was wrong, but I think in the context of the flight and what maybe flight attendants have come against, they figured we just want to avoid a confrontation, but it turned out to be a to-do anyway.
All right, Kevin.
You're not going to like this, Joe.
He said you're not going to like this.
You're not going to like this, Joe. I think I've been flying for a long time. I think we all have been flying for a long time. I've been on a lot of planes. I've flown all over the world, a lot domestic. When did this start? I mean, the reason I say Joe's not going to like this because I know Joe's a Trump supporter. I think, and I'm going to blame Donald Trump. I think he's ruined us as a society. His 4 years in the White House is taking his toll. We're a basket case right now. And the COVID, a year of COVID had something to do with it too. But I just think I've never seen, like I said, and I know you guys have flown all over the world. You've been over other countries and stuff like that. I've never seen this before. Like, we have, and I've been on planes. I flew to Phoenix in March to do a resort out there, and I wore my Obama shirt on the plane. I flew on Delta. I had a Obama t-shirt on. I haven't worn that shirt in a long time, and nobody said anything. His picture's right on the shirt, you know. The shirt's from when he was running for office, so it was before he was even president. I still had that t-shirt. He was running for office when I bought that shirt, but so it's pretty old. But I went on a plane with some blue jeans, man. Nobody said anything. I was going to Phoenix. I didn't have a jacket to cover it up because I knew when I got to Phoenix, it was going to be hot as hell. So, you know, it was March. Weather was fair here in New York. I flew out of LaGuardia. Nobody said anything. I just think the fact that it was Biden and so many people are upset at Biden because of the big lie that, you know, I think that that's is what, you know, because if she had a George Bush thing, would that have caused a problem? Or any president? I mean, people have been wearing presidential attire forever, right? I mean, as far as I know, we've all had our presidential attire. I mean, I never owned a Bill Clinton thing. I was kind of young when Clinton was in office. And, you know, Bush was president for 8 years. I wasn't a Bush fan. So I'm just saying, I don't know, man. I just think that I hate to do that too, man. I just think this guy has lowered the bar of humanity so much in our country right now that we are at this point and maybe a point of no return. I just never seen us this far, this divided ever. And I think a lot of it has to do with this big lie that the election was stolen. And people won't accept Biden as the president. Have we ever had anybody not accept a president as a president?
Let me push back. I'm not going to blame Trump on this. Trump was god awful. I'm not going to blame Trump on this. I'm going to blame us. We suck. We're stupid. We're sensitive. You can't fucking disagree. Donald Trump didn't walk on that plane, go to that game, and go, she can't go on the fucking flight. Right. There was either some people who complained or a flight attendant because there could be a problem because they're wearing something I don't like. Stop it.
That's the same thing I was saying earlier about the email, though. People are afraid.
Right.
There's other comedians that do Trump jokes. Then no, I never got an email saying don't do an Obama joke.
But right, again, I'm not going to blame Donald. Donald Trump just tapped into how fucking awful we are.
That's what I meant to say.
Right. Donald Trump is the worst of us, and there are a lot of really awful of us on both the left and the right. This is what I was talking about with Paul Bond. Paul's like, well, you know, the left wants to, you know, cancel everybody. They want to cancel me. I go, yeah, the right's got it too. I say it's both sides. People got to fucking not go. Hey, I was talking about this last week. I was talking about at the Orange County Fair. There was a guy wearing a Donald Trump shirt and had Donald Trump holding up two middle fingers. He goes, hey, Joe Biden, you dropped something. Not only was it pro-Donald Trump, anti-Joe Biden, and it had expletives on it, you know what I did? Ignored it and went on with my fucking day because I'm an adult because that's what you do. Go, okay, and you move along. You don't have to register a complaint. You don't have to write a fucking letter. You don't have to do a social media post. You don't have to contact the airline or the comedy club. You should be an adult. Okay.
Can I say this one real quickly?
Yes.
I can sit here and disagree with Joe for hours on politics.
Give it a shot.
I will still have dinner with Joe. I still have lunch with Joe. I still would travel with Joe. I still would do shows with Joe. I would still book Joe if I had a comedy club to book him. It's never personal. I just want to make sure you tell that to Mr. Baum when you talk
well,
to him.
Well, you know, you and him can have your own fucking conversations.
I don't talk to
him.
Well,
you know, it's also with Harry Truman. Harry Truman and I get along fantastic. I mean,
he's scared to talk to me. He don't talk to me. But me and Joe don't agree on politics, but we have a respectful conversation here, right?
Yeah.
Every time I'm on this show, we have a respectful conversation.
Well, listen, it's a great show tonight, but Joe's not on fucking 11 night sometimes. Sometimes Joe gets to 11 and it's not respectful. That being said, we look past that and we move on to the next thing.
But guys are still best friends.
Yeah, we're still tight because we're adult-ish.
Exactly.
We're fucking man-children.
We're all Americans at the end of the day.
That's the difference. That's how you look at it. We're all Americans at the end of the day. What you have with these political factions, you're not American because you don't see it the way I do, and you have to go. And we saw it on the left when W was in office, and now we see it on the right with Donald Trump. Listen, I think
W was horrible. Look, he left the Obama inherited the country. That was horrible.
I don't like either one of those presidents. But I'm saying is what I'm saying is you. But even with all that, and I hated W.
I like him now.
Well, now he's not the last guy. But still, at the end of the day, I didn't look and go, well, you're not American. But that's the thing. And Donald Trump does foment that. We've never had anybody to stir the pot. That being said, we're the fucking pot. It's very easy to ignore Donald Trump and go, he's a fucking lunatic. It's really, even Joe, who likes his policies and everything, once in a while go, yeah, Trump's a lunatic or something to that effect.
Joe can wear a George Bush shirt or a Ronald Reagan shirt on any airplane in America, and nobody's going to look at him like he's out of his freaking mind.
But you want to know something? It's almost the way the flight attendant handled this. It's like, you know, guys, when there's a heckler or a drunk at a club, some clubs let him sit there, and they go, well, you know, he's a customer, and you don't worry about the other fucking people in the place. What the flight attendant should have told these people that were upset, it's a sign. It's in Spanish. Get over it. Unless there's a sign that has Muhammad Atta on it, anything else is coming on a fucking plane. The Mahatma,
But you know that listen, but that, see, that's just the case. And you actually brought this up in your blog. You actually said in your blog you didn't think anybody was offended. You thought it was the flight attendant, which I hadn't even thought of. It's possible. We don't know, but either way, somebody there, whether it be other passengers or this flight attendant, was a fucking snowflake that can't see the name fucking Biden. Or apparently a painting of a cactus that looks like a hairy testicles and a cock.
But how do we get to this point, though? That's what I'm saying. How do we get to this point? How do we get here, David?
Because I'll tell you how. First of all, we cater to the stupid. We cater to the lowest common denominator and the self-importance of reality TV. And, you know, if you complain, you can't be offended. That's what we do. So now we're just sliding. So now the left gets offended by somebody. They want to cancel something on the right. The right gets offended by something. They want to cancel something on the left and go, heh, I don't like that. And going on with your day, which is what we used to do. That's how good we have it in this country. We have it so good. Hold on, let me finish this.
Well,
let me just finish. We have it so good in this country that a sign, or a joke can make us butthurt. You know why? Because we have food and water. When we go down to wash our clothes, we don't have to worry about a lion biting us in the ass. We're so
alligator.
Yeah, or an alligator. We're so fucking soft in this country. We're so coddled in this country, and we used to respect American toughness. Now we pretend we're American tough, but we're all a bunch of pussies. Like the whole thing about Trump. Trump was a tough guy, and I said it during the whole presidency. He was the biggest fucking pussy we've ever seen. Nobody got more butthurt than Donald Trump. God forbid you said something about Donald Trump. Oh, they're all out to get me. Shut the fuck up, stupid. You're president. Of course they're all out to get you. That's the gig. And now everybody feels that way. They're all out to get me. I don't like what they said. Shut the fuck up and do something else. Don't you have something more important to worry about? Go on, Joe.
Well, also with the internet and Facebook and Twitter. Basically, when I was a kid, and I've said this before on the show, when I was a kid, I only heard politics talk on two occasions, when my mother and grandmother in the car and we were driving somewhere, or when my uncle and my mom would debate something during a holiday. That was it. Now with Facebook, where everybody's got something to say, Twitter, where everybody's got something to say, and the media, where everybody has us in our own camps, it's been a lot more prevalent, and it's gotten into normal society. Where, you know, you have people, well, this Biden sign in Spanish, this is offensive. No, it's not. Nobody gives a shit. Well, these people that saw the sign are offended. Well, they can take the fucking next flight out then. You know? So, for Southwest to sit there and go, well, we don't hamper political opinions. Bullshit. You just did.
No, listen, we agree. And listen.
Look, I just performed in the South. And when I was in down South performing, I saw so many Trump flags on the back of pickup trucks. That was just down South not too long ago. And I seen so many Confederate flags. I seen Trump flags. I seen just flying on houses and yards and trucks. And I even passed one stand. It was a stand on the side of the road, a truck that was selling Trump memorabilia and Confederate flags in the same truck, you know.
Well, that might have been Trump's stand.
we see stuff that can be offensive, and I was offended by that by seeing that stuff. And it's a little scary to me driving in the South by myself, and when I see that type of stuff, you know, on the side of the road, I'm going, "What the hell, man? I need to get to my hotel or condo before it gets dark." You know, I mean, what the fuck? You know, this is what I see when I'm driving. So, yeah, it's a little scary driving down South when you see all of that stuff, because, you know, people that put that stuff up don't have good intentions for a guy that looks like me. So, you know, but so, yeah, you can be offended by seeing things like that. Now, if I saw somebody on a plane wearing a Trump shirt or a MAGA hat, I would ignore it, you know. The only thing I care about when I'm on a plane is that fucker standing in the air until we get to where we're going. I don't care about nothing else.
Yeah, same here.
I don't care about nothing
and
else.
I'm gonna get upset.
We're going to go up. We're going to come down in a different state. I'm going to get off. I'm happy. That's all I care about. I don't care about nothing. I don't care about the food,
and,
the peanuts,
the only thing I get
or what anybody's wearing.
They sell you that snack box for $20 that you know cost them $4. That's the only thing I get upset about.
Yeah, I don't care about safety, man.
This all happens because we have dehumanized people who do not think exactly like we do. If you don't think like I do, then you don't count. You're unimportant. You're not American. And it just fucking goes from there. That's the problem. Now, Biden was elected to try to fix that. Is he going to be able to? I don't know. I think the best thing that's happened for the country was Donald Trump losing his social media because we don't have to listen to him stirring the pot every day. That's the best thing.
He has people stirring the pot for him.
That's fine, but they're not Donald Trump. Donald Trump, we've talked about this a million times. Donald Trump is a one of a kind. They all try to be Donald Trump. They can't be Donald Trump. There's one Donald Trump. What is it about him? I don't know. It never appealed to me, but it certainly appeals to a lot of people. There's only one, and they're all poor imitations of him, and it's not going to work for them.
Well, they're dangerous.
But yeah, I look forward to the day when you could have a conversation with somebody and disagree and then have a fucking beer afterwards and not try to cancel them or think they're not human. Or just
Donald Trump clones are dangerous. I mean, DeSantis is dangerous.
Well, DeSantis is dangerous because he's fucking intelligent.
Marjorie Taylor Greene has a lot of people that follow her.
She's crazy.
She has a lot of people that send her money. She's dangerous. Josh Hawley's dangerous. All these guys, they're dangerous. I don't know,
Marjorie Taylor Greene, I don't know how dangerous she is. I mean, yes, there are people that follow her, but she's an asshole and she's out of her fucking mind. And
Kevin, I'll push back on this because
how many Kevin,
they would tell you AOC is dangerous. They would tell you Joe Biden is dangerous. I mean, everybody's always the whole thing. That's the problem. Everybody's always fucking dangerous. We got to escalate and just go, all right, I don't agree with anything they say. Now, when you encourage people to fucking take up arms, that's dangerous. You know, when you start encouraging violence against other Americans and are like overthrowing elections, whatever, you know, that's what's happening. I understand.
Okay.
That's dangerous.
We're closer right now in this country to a freaking civil war, guys, than ever before since the Civil War.
because
I mean, we're literally close to having a freaking civil war.
Because we are not tough enough to look at ourselves and look at our history and look at where we've been and look at where we want to go and go, okay, we can do this. This is going to be hard. It's a lot easier to go, you know what, Joe? I don't agree with your politics at all. You're nothing like me. Fuck you. I don't want you to have a career. You're not entitled to a family. It's a lot easier to do that because that doesn't take any real work for me. Now I feel like a tough guy because I'm writing you off as opposed to having the conversation, working through and go, all right, we don't agree here, but maybe we agree over there. That's what was so cool about this infrastructure deal. All the pork that might be in it, which Joe has could have valid criticism for. I'm sure there is. But it was still, it's like, wow, that's the way the government used to work.
Yeah.
Both sides, they went back and forth with it. Nobody's really happy with it, but we got something done. It's good. That's the way our government's supposed to work. So if Joe Biden gets this through, and the biggest issue is now going to be AOC and the progressives on the left, that's going to be the biggest obstacle. So Nancy Pelosi has to herd those cats. We'll see how that works.
Through, but they're not only allowed so much to go through because he can't keep winning. Because if he keep winning, then he has something to run on again.
But this guy,
in 3 years.
This guy's already accomplished. If this happens, he's already accomplished stuff that Obama and Trump couldn't fucking do.
Well, he's
and
part
he's already
of Obama's.
Won.
But
I'm talking about his presidency.
Okay, gotcha.
He will have gotten a win that the last 12 years at least. I don't remember if W had an infrastructure deal. Forgive me, but the last 12 years of presidents before him could not do. And Trump had infrastructure week every week. And McConnell wasn't going to let Obama get that win.
And that's enough of Davin for him to run again if he stay healthy, or his predecessor to run if he stay.
Let me tell you something. Both parties are going to run on it when bridges start getting fixed in their fucking districts. You know, when airports start getting better, it's the type of deal that both parties can run on. See, the difference is the Republicans were against Biden for COVID-19 and all the money that gave to restaurants. None of them voted for it, but they still ran on it when they went back to their district because their people apparently don't know that they're full of shit. This is something where they can legitimately say, no, I voted for. Everybody's going to come out a winner in this thing. That's why it should have been done 12 years ago. It should have happened under Obama. It should have happened under Trump.
You see, yeah, and it's going to be, and to that effect, it would be for tangible results to see if it's not going to turn into a boondoggle. So it's going to be critical to them to get stuff shovel ready, cut a lot of regulations that it takes a lot of time. They might do it because, you know, maybe for the 2020 elections, at least the 2024 presidential election, we'll see if they're going to cut a lot of red tape to get projects up and shovel ready. So that remains to be seen. I don't like a lot of the pork in it. I don't like a lot of the union.
Well, we don't know what the pork is, Joe. We haven't read the bill. I don't know what the pork is.
Well,
you don't
that's what I said from what I'm hearing. I mean, I really want to, you know, I'll leave it there because I really want to get excerpts from the bill or see, you know, what is in it.
I'm sure Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN and Newsmax will give you all the choice tidbits they want you to know about.
Yeah, but here's the key. To go and find it myself.
Yes.
And well, read it on my own.
It's probably online already.
For either network to pepper it and make up my own mind.
Well, it's online. Listen, I'm just saying that's the way the government used to work. And if this gets passed, that's a major accomplishment, not just for Joe Biden, but for the country. We'll see what happens.
Well, like I said, we've always agreed on that. Like I said, the interviewed business, and I think brought this up like 5 years ago, the interviewed business and said, what is the biggest thing curtailing the United States of really progressing more in the economic world? They said the infrastructure absolutely stinks and it's got to be fixed. So, you know, it remains to be seen where we're going. Hopefully it'll work out.
If it gets passed, then that's another a feather in his cap. But I don't know how many feathers he can put in his cap when he has
probably
50 million people that think he's not even president.
It will probably be his last big win in his first 4 years because I don't think the Republicans are going to give him another one. You know
exactly.
Which is, I don't want to get into a whole thing, but it's really a shame, and both parties do it. It's like, oh, we can't give this guy a win because then we won't win in the next election. As opposed to, how about a win for fucking Americans? How about a win for? How about we look at this thing and see how?
I've noticed that too. Now, if you watch Fox, well, we all watch Fox, CNBC, CNN, and stuff like that. It's always how it's going to benefit the party.
Yep.
It's never how it's going to benefit the people. And obviously both parties do it, and I think it stinks. It's always, well, it's going to, you know, benefit. But what about benefiting the country? And there really is a loss of that.
I was going to just say that that's just a norm, though, right? When I was overseas entertaining the troops, and I would be out on a base in Guam that was Marines, all they did was talk about how bad the Navy was. And then when I fly to Italy and work for the Navy in Italy, they talk about how bad the Army is. When I got to Germany, I'm on Army base, and they're talking about how bad this is. And I'm like, aren't we all Americans? Aren't we fighting for the same freaking thing? We're fighting for the same thing, right?
I'm going to rally us all. We can all agree how bad the Boston Red Sox are. And Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Let's all rally around those three things. If we just focus on that, America will be great again. And you're welcome. All right, let's take our final break. We're going to come back with In the Barrel, a battle of wits between Kevin Lee and Joe Curry. I'll explain that when we come back. On the break, we got new music from Glassy with Chasing Paradise and Danky Segal with Killer. And you can learn more about both them at khb-music.de.